So welcome to My Art Broker Talks. I'm your host, Charlotte Stewart, and today we are joined by Jasper Tordoff, our Hockney specialist. Jasper, thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Charlotte. Thanks for having me on.
Jasper, where do we start with an artist who's had such an extraordinary career?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and always somewhat difficult. I mean, Hockney's career has been, it's been a very long career. It's sort of came into prominence in the sort of 50s and 60s. Came onto the British art scene in a time where Europe was really dominated by abstraction, and Hockney was somebody who liked figurative references. So he was quite cutting edge in that way. His career has spanned many, many decades, and he's an artist that's probably best defined as being somebody that changes it up. He's a master of all sorts of different mediums and techniques. So to give you sort of a broad rundown of the different ways that Hockney was working, we had in the sort of 50s and 60s when he went to the Bradford School of Art and later studied at the Royal Academy. That's where he discovered, he was doing a lot of painting at the time. That's really where he discovered lithographs and printmaking, which of course is what we're going to talk about slightly later on. And then he began with that and then sort of started doing, mixing up with a massive variety of mediums, from photocopying, collage, to sort of Japanese woodcut block prints. And then to later date in 2010, where he was sort of experimenting with digital prints. So it's a huge question to answer and sort of try and sum up. But his career has been defined by changing different techniques and really pioneering new mediums as they come about.
It's fascinating, isn't it? Because he continually reinvents himself, and perhaps he's one of those artists where they do something new and different, and people are perhaps slightly wary of it to start with. I mean, the iPad drawings, what was their reception?
It was quite difficult to gauge the initial reception. It's something quite pioneering and new to the market that David Hockney did, and perhaps more of a traditional artist creating etchings and things like that, to move on to such a new medium was quite the jump. We have seen over time that the appetite for these iPad works has become huge, and it's really become of demands outweighing the supply. Given these are still quite large edition sizes, these pieces are quite difficult to find. But I do think over time, with the vibrancy of those iPads and the access to colour and the freedom that Hockney was able to work in live settings in plain air. I mean, if you look at some of the earlier series that he's done, some of his etchings, say A Rake's Progress, these are much smaller plate etchings that he's done. Whereas with the iPad, and I think with newer technologies, being able to print something of such a high quality on a larger format, that really enabled Hockney to convey that impact of what he probably wanted to do. Bright colours, quite in your face, on a large scale. That's really, I think those new technologies have in printing have been able to make something that has a much more profound impact. I remember seeing the exhibition where works from The Arrival of Springs were hung, and they dominated the room. I mean, these gallery rooms are quite big, and they really did look great. They do occupy the space quite nicely.
I think what's amazing is, he's an artist who's, how old is he now? 86 or something?
Yes. Yeah. Around that. Yeah.
It's just, it's extraordinary. You think of, most 86-year-olds and it's the way that they embrace technology. And Hockney's, he's the first one. The art market can be so traditional and so in its way that it just amazes me. We had the Lightroom exhibition.
Yeah.
That he's just, do you think that's part of what's kept his, I think, am I right in saying, the iPad drawings, they first went on sale for tens of thousands of pounds, and now they regularly sell for over 100,000. Do you think that his ability to reinvent his practice, which is really what people have been always very obsessed with, is this his practice and his process?
Yes.
You think that's why? And is there any other artist quite like that in the marketplace?
David Hockney and his ability, if you track his career, his career has been about changing the norm in a way. Abstraction was dominating Europe, and he sort of came in with a bit more figurative impact and always famously said that he didn't want to be like Ellis Lowry. So you can see elements of that. And so that was a break of the norm when that was like the canon of what everybody was interested in. He was doing something different. And in a similar way, you can track that back to his techniques, his digital iPads. No one else is doing that. Nobody else is going through the whole process and printing it. As much as I think it's a way of him embracing new technology, I think it's also it really enabled him to work faster, to really look at what he was seeing and being able to reproduce that in the way he wanted. The speed that allowed him to work, the variety of colors that he had access to. I mean, he was going to these places and with his iPad and drawing them in situ, which is very much what the Impressionists were doing. So essentially, he also embraced the new technology because it allowed him to work much faster. And particularly if you look at series like The Arrival of Springs, he was going out on particular days to capture the tiny changes in nature that you do pick up on, particularly if you're looking at something for so long. So I think the speed that working on an iPad and enabled him to really capture the smallest of details. And he even talks about when he was producing even the zoom quality that you wouldn't be able to have. So you lose texture, but I think in the way that Hockney was working almost as a colorist in these series, it really sort of sharpens up his palettes. You get much more sort of contrast with the colors. And that I think is why he really embraced it. It was really the tech that enabled you to do that, which is interesting. It's almost like Warhol when the screen printing came around. That you can see correlations there. That medium allowed him to trial out with colors, and begs the question as to whether if the iPad was about when Warhol was working, whether that would have been.
Absolutely. That's a really interesting comparison, isn't it? And there's always this nudge towards the new, and there's always a sort of the shock of the new, and a lot of people aren't sure of it. I mean, you know, we've just been through the NFT revolution, which pushed the boundaries to an extent, and we're seeing what Hearst is doing in that space. Do you think Hockney would ever get involved in NFTs, Jasper?
I don't know. I think if he had sort of an advisor, perhaps they would push him into that. I think the NFT
he thinks about that.
it would be fascinating as somebody that does. I just don't know if that's a step too far for Hockney. I don't know. I mean, you know, nobody expects him to do works on an iPad, so who knows? That'd be quite exciting to watch. I think the way, you know, if we draw comparisons to Hearst and David Hockney, I mean, Hearst is much more commercial. I think the audience for something like a Damien Hearst NFT is going to be completely different to a David Hockney NFT.
I'm part joking. I like to imagine that Hockney would disapprove, actually. So where should a collector start? So we've talked about this incredible breadth of career and the reinvention and the kind of new ways of seeing and perspectives. So where, from a price point perspective, but also how do you have such a huge body of work, knowing where to, maybe if you're looking for return on an artwork over a period of 10 years, where should you start?
It's a tough one. There's such a body of work because Hockney's had such a long career in printmaking. You know, there is an idea, and I do advise a lot of people on this, is that if you are looking to collect some of his work, that there might be the jump to some of his great works, you know, the Pool series, something that everybody recognises is probably some of Hockney's best work. But I think there is a really nice way of doing it. If you break it up and you say, great, I'm going to get some of Hockney's early lithographs, that he was doing in the 50s and 60s, and then you come on to something some of the more stronger works when he moved to California and really developed different techniques, so using a photocopier, using Japanese woodblock prints, say, you know, if you took a look at the Weather series from 73, and then you can jump onto some of the iPads, which are really exciting, and that there's new works always being done. I mean, he's done some recent releases with Tashton, which is quite exciting. So I think breaking it up into time periods, because you get to see, you get a sense of the artist's progression. You can draw similarities to the way that Bridget Riley's work develops. And I think there's a lot of similarities with David Hockney and how he's developed. You can almost see the influence of California when he went there. You can see the stronger shadows, the more exposure to color. And then you can sort of end that with the bright, colorful colorist, as we know Hockney, when he was producing the iPads. Now, to answer the second part of your question about price points, they do really vary. I think typically you could get some of his earlier lithographs and etchings. These would typically start around sort of £10,000 to £25,000, typically, which I think there's a huge amount of value in there. These are normally of a much smaller edition, a lesser known work. And then you can sort of come on to his sort of middle body of work. You've got works like the Weather series that are doing exceptionally well at auction at the moment. You've also got some of the sets as well in here. This is when he was doing a lot of work with Celia, obviously one of his main muses. And then you've got the iPads. Now, these are hard to come by, but typically they would begin around the sort of 30 and jumping up to about 100k mark. Then you've got the later arrival of spring, these much bigger works that he did, again on the iPad. And the market has softened, but I would roughly price these anywhere from sort of 100 to 300,000 pounds for these large scale David Hockney iPads. So it's great. I don't know how many other artists have such a span of works with different price points. It really creates a nice opportunity for any collector that has an interest in Hockney to be able to acquire different types of works by an artist.
I think you can't think about Hockney without thinking about pools. So paper pools, in terms of investability, does that stand as probably, obviously iPads have seen a huge amount of growth, you know, and they entered the market, what, around 2010?
Yes, 2010, 2009. You've got to really look at the market and what the market's done. I always think and guide people, you know, what's your exit strategy down the line? And always advise to buy the highest quality of works. So for Hockney, that would be the pools, the lithograph made of pools, colored lines, all of these works. And again, the iPads do come into that as well. What you can see in terms of how you can guide somebody is where have these previously traded at? You know, what can I expect? Should you look at the past and sort of have a good indication of what might happen in the future? Buying something like paper pools, it would be a great place to start. I know that the pool made with paper done in 1980, it's an edition of 1,000, but there's huge amounts of value. And I think we saw across the whole print market during COVID, prices get a little bit high. There's been a general sort of sense that the market's consolidated since then. So there's some great value purchases in works like the paper pools. These are pieces that new collectors come into space, think of Hockney, think of pools. Your exit strategy is going to be much easier. But I don't know if I'm biased, I think there's a huge amount of value in the smaller edition lithographs that he's done, perhaps overlooked, not as well covered in the media.
Underrated works, because there's so much there that it's quite often just sort of spurred on by, you know, a few auction results that then has an impact on that activity. We see that quite a lot, don't we? Something goes through auction, and there's this sort of heightened activity. What hasn't been seen for quite a long time and could be overlooked?
I mean, I'm even going to go as far back to say something like a Rake's Progress, that full set last came to auction in 2021. I think the buyer paid just under £500,000. I think this sparked interest into these really intricate smaller pieces that he's etched onto a plate, which I still find fascinating. Etched with amazing detail, and of course signed by Hockney. I think these are somewhat overlooked. They don't have the color. There's the iPads. You know, they're probably less well coveted in the press. But, you know, there's often very strong auction results behind these pieces as well. Etchings from the 60s and 70s. I really do like these awful lot of work that's gone in by the artist. There's not this idea that a he does an original and the print's just an off run. I mean, the print is the art piece.
He's one of the few artists that we work with that is a printmaker by priority, right?
Well, I mean, it's also when he was at the Bradford College of Art, he ran out of paints. He had to create prints almost in a commercial way to raise funds to keep his career. And I think the reason he went to California was that he had a collector come along and buy some of his prints that gave him enough money to travel. So probably as an artist, they have quite a special place for him. They enabled him to carry on his journey. And he definitely is a printmaker. And it's important not to think that he's an artist and then a printmaker. It's the two different disciplines. Now, I think as we've discussed previously, David Hockney's body of works spreads across many decades. And you've got works that were printed in the 80s, 60s, etc. And these typically have just had a longer life. So finding out exactly what the condition is going to be more important than something that was printed, say, in 2010, 2019 on a digital iPad. So there's various ways that we can check this. What we do is we can have full condition reports carried out, which I think is a standard. You need to get the artwork out of the frame. Sadly, back in the 80s, 60s, there wasn't conservation grade framing. And so unfortunately, there can be damage. Certain things such as too much exposure to light can cause a bit of fading, discoloration in the colors, which isn't good. But again, that can be assessed by a conservation specialist. So understanding the condition of the artwork that you have for sale is very important. That will inevitably have an impact on the value of what you can achieve in a private sale. The second thing, and arguably even more important, is assessing the provenance. Like any artwork that gathers value, there's going to be reproductions that aren't correct out there on the market. So being able to have an idea of provenance, so where the print has previously come from, has it come from a gallery, has it been inherited, and having documentation behind this so you can track the life of the print, ideally from the publisher. However, this isn't always possible. We all appreciate that receipts get lost, particularly from a long time ago. So understanding provenance, looking at stickers on the back of the piece, on the framing, you can really sort of track an artwork back. So once you've got the thumbs up on that, you've got something. And then in terms of valuing, we look at both sort of private sale and auction data to give you a really good idea of what the market's doing. There's certain things that we get to see as brokers and specialists where pieces are in much higher demand. So the iPads right now seem to be very attractive on the market. There's a lot of buying demand. So in terms of selling, it's all also about timing the market right. When you've got buyers for something, generally increase the value. So combining all of those is really important, but I would obviously say provenance and assessing the condition of the piece will impact the value. They will also be able to give you a good indication of the nuances that come with conservation. So assessing the work's condition, you immediately have a much better idea. And also that they will just look after the print much, much better. So yes, we do have everything deframed. We will think that buying on this level, you want to see the front and back. You want to see how it was framed. Did it have an acidic mount board? You know, that causes huge amounts of discoloration. So seeing the artwork and assessing it out of the frame is very important. It also enables treatments. So you can then have a work pressed. You can preserve the quality of the artwork for the longest period of time, which is very important.
And we can obviously help people with that. It's not something they have to go out and do themselves. We can take a work and take it through that process before sale.
Yeah.
And obviously this is probably not one answer, Jasper, because we've just talked about how we're almost talking about, you know, almost sort of three oeuvres of art that have come out of Hockney, if you can split them up in any way. But when, you know, let's talk about early works, perhaps, to start with. When is a good time to sell a Hockney? You know, is right now a fantastic time because the market's particularly or a little more liquid for Hockney's work than it has been in the past? And, you know, if you own something like an iPad, is it a good idea to hold on to it? I know you'd love to be buying and selling more iPad works, but But yeah, what is a good time to sell?
It's a really good question. Like, when is a good time to sell a David Hockney print? If you are in the market to sell, timing is important. I would say timing isn't everything in the David Hockney market. I mean, the market is generally very steady. There isn't a great time to sell at a particular time. That said, we always think that a good time to sell a David Hockney is for a particular piece is when we've got a buyer, when we've got a lot of interest in that piece. I mean, it can sort of ensure you a slightly speedier sale. And not to turn this into a promotional video, but that's one of the benefits and that my art broker, that our service can provide you is we can see that you have the artwork and we can alert you when we've got a buyer looking for that particular work. And then we can assess the market. But really, it's one of the great things of working in the Hockney market is that the prices don't fluctuate as much as other markets. And there's really steady movement in the marketplace at the moment, which is good.
What's next for David Hockney? There must be something next. Like, he's just been able to reinvent and create newness in everything he does.
Yeah.
At 86 years old, what's next for Hockney?
It's a good question. I'm not too sure what's next. I mean, the digital iPad's somewhat become old. I know we touched on earlier about the NFT and the potential of an NFT to come out. The AI space would be interesting with David Hockney. You know, we saw that with the Lightroom. I would probably imagine something in the AI space. I think that would be great. And it would be a nice way to really sort of see how Hockney's gone from, you know, etching on the back of a copper plate to embracing AI and tech. What do you think, Charlotte? I mean, is there anything? It's difficult to gauge.
It is difficult. I don't think in a million years Hockney would touch NFTs. I know we talked about it earlier, but yeah, I just think that's there. I don't know. I think what's surprising about him is that people think they've seen the last of David Hockney. And then he just keeps, and you know, collaborations. The Lightroom was a collaboration with him. The ultimate sort of David Hockney immersion experience. And I think what an incredible, you know, if that is the sort of the end of creation with his work, what an incredible output to be able to document an artist. And what that's particularly fascinating is if you read books that were written about Hockney in the 90s and they ain't seen nothing yet, you know?
Yes, and he keeps pulling the rabbit out of the box. I think maybe it might go on to sort of the ways of users experiencing his artworks in the way that we saw that with Kusama and the Infinity Rooms. It might be moved something onto that, more into the viewership as opposed to producing something new. We'll have to see. It's exciting.
Very exciting. Thank you, Jasper. It's been brilliant.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you. Thank you, Charlotte. Thanks for having me on.